Yeah, well, just taking a look over the course of this past week, just the data out of the US, still very strong. So when we read through some of the issues which obviously are occurring around the world at the moment, not least of which are geopolitical risks, which threaten weaker growth at some point, together with some high inflation, the power data out of the US, very, very strong still, and suggests that if we read through all this, we're still going to get quite strong growth with high inflation. And for example, last week, looking back into the past, we had a revision to Q4 GDP. It was actually revised stronger. Now, remember that the Q4 GDP report in the US was the strongest single winter quarter of annualized growth that we'd seen since 1946, at 6.9% annualized growth. It was revised up to 7%, so it's been revised even stronger. And the contributions to that growth are something that we're expecting to see continue, and that is that real consumer spending was very, very strong. It was 3.1% annualized in real terms. And if anything, that's getting even stronger over the next month or two, because we're getting a rebound off that Omicron wave, where the Omicron wave is over the top and consumers are starting to spend more freely again. But also we had enormously strong private sector spending on investment, largely coming from business in the US. And so we've got these very, very strong contributions, which we expect to see, can be very difficult to derail unless they have a policy reason for them to be derailed. And of course, that brings us back to the Fed. The Fed has to lift interest rates at some point, but it's got to lift it a long way before it makes much difference to the sorts of underpinnings we've got for US growth at the moment. Just to put a bit more colour on that too, we had January personal consumption spending numbers came out last week, rather like the retail sales numbers we saw a couple of weeks ago for January. There's been a big rebound in January. So going back to December, that was the Omicron wave, where we had personal consumption spending down by 0.8% month on month. The market thought we would get a rebound of about 1.5%. We got a rebound of 2.1%. Also, we're just seeing a little bit more strength running through, for example, consumer confidence and consumer sentiment in the February readings. February consumer confidence came out last week, and it was expected to come back a little bit, given all the factors which are occurring in terms of geopolitical risk around the world and or various other bits and pieces. It did come back, but not as much as expected. It came back to 110.5, which is still a very elevated reading from 111.1. And the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey, the alternative survey that came out on Friday, also still a stronger report than expected. It was expected to be 61.7. It came in at 62.8. So most of these factors still looking pretty firm for the U.S. In terms of what's coming out of the U.S. this week, obviously we're going to have some focus on developments overseas. And what I should say about that is trying to get it down to some sort of economic terms of what will come out of the war in Ukraine. The risks obviously are quite high for certain commodity prices. And so amongst those are energy prices and food prices. So if anything, there's going to be a further lift in terms of producer price inflation in most economies around the world, but very specifically in Europe, where producer prices are already running at over 26% year on year. So we've got some real pressure points there still ahead as far as pressures coming through from prices. We can get some sentiment effects depending on how the crisis develops that may bring back growth somewhat. And so we place central banks in a very, very difficult position because they have an inflation problem which is building and will continue to build over the course of coming months. But with this potential risk from that crisis that it may just dent growth somewhat, and maybe that helps them at the margin. My suspicion is that most central banks probably won't deviate too much. They've taken a view that they're going to tackle this thing quite slowly, and even with the tougher rhetoric that's come through from the Federal Reserve, still they'll only be starting to lift interest rates in their March meeting. and you know they've got the Fed funds rate at 0 to 0.25% against an annual inflation rate of 7.5%, and very sticky at that 7.5% at the moment for the time being. So a lot of work for them to do. I don't think they're going to be necessarily disrupted by what's happening with the crisis which is developing in Europe, although of course it's very, very hard to call exactly what will happen there next. Just in terms of the data reads coming through this week in the US, by far the key one is the non-farm payrolls report coming out right at the end of the month, the end of the week. And the key things to watch here, I think, are average hourly earnings. One of the problems the US faces is that it already has wages growth, which will sustain inflation over not just this year, but extending into 2023 and 2024. Average hourly earnings for the month of February will come out in the labour force report on Friday. And going back a month, the month-on-month was 0.7%, and the year-on-year was 5.7%. The month-on-month, the market thinks, will be 0.5%, but even with that coming back, you'll have the annual rate lifting to 5.8% year-on-year from 5.7%. Now, 5.7% or 5.8% year-on-year annual growth in wages is more than enough to keep, you know, even if we get a fallback in inflation going back into 2023 and the late part of 2022, which we will get because of that 7.5 percentage points of annual inflation growth, around 4 percentage points of that is coming from goods prices lifting and also energy prices. Now, some of those are going to fall back, and you know, you could get almost zero contribution from those in the second half of the 2022. So you know, that would bring your 7.5% inflation rate back to about 3.5%, but that 3.5% is still too high. And with wages growth running at over 5%, you're going to be accelerating again going into 2023 and 2024. So that's where the numbers out on Friday are pretty important for you know, what markets will expect about inflation going forward. Non-farm payrolls themselves, very strong employment growth running through the US. Back in January, we had 467,000 lift in non-farm payrolls after a 500,000-odd lift going back to December. And the market expects another 450,000 in the month of February. And so the unemployment rate, which going back to January was at 4%, probably straining down towards 3.9%. So very, very tight labour market, one of the key factors which is keeping the prospects of interest rate increases in the United States very much live and starting in March. Moving elsewhere, in China last week, we had January house prices. China's a different economy to the rest of the world in the sense that it's been slowing. Most other parts of the world have been accelerating in terms of economic growth through the course of 2022. It's partly due to specific policies in China, particularly relating to commercial real estate and residential real estate construction. And those policies are still fairly much in place, but with the offset that the Chinese authorities are starting to slowly ease monetary policy and are looking at areas where they can expand government spending, particularly down in some of the regional areas which have been worst affected by policy initiatives related to construction. But all of that is going to take some time before it works, and for the time being, the Chinese economy has been slowing. So some of the numbers show that. And, you know, house prices, which anywhere else in our part of the world, whether it's Australia, New Zealand, Canada, United States, United Kingdom, we have house prices which are rising at an annual rate of 20 to 30% at the moment on a year-on-year basis. In the case of China, house prices have come back. They were running over 10% year-on-year at the beginning of 2021. That's fallen all the way down to 2.6% year-on-year by the time we got to December last year. And the most recent reading for January, which came out last week, is now down to 2.3%. So house prices have all but stalled in China. That's unique in the world at the moment, but it's a function of the weaker growth running through. People's Bank of China met. They didn't do much else on monetary policy, but over recent months they've eased both the reserve ratio requirement and they have brought down their official interest rate, the official interest rate sitting at 3.7% now. It wasn't changed at that meeting. This week in China, we get some future-looking indicators. We get their purchasing managers' reports, both the manufacturing and the services sector reports, both for the month of February, and we get both the official readings of those and the private sector Caixin surveys of these. The Caixin survey looked on as being a somewhat more reliable indicator. The manufacturing PMI in China was at 50.1 going back to January. It's expected to ease a little bit further to 49.9, so we're just below the expansion contraction line as far as Chinese manufacturing is concerned. That also is pretty unique in the world at the moment, where purchasing managers in the indices are typically in the mid to high 50s and in some cases the 60s. And so China is, again, the odd man out there, where you've got these slowing indicators running through those forward indicators. The services sector PMI too, pretty soft. It was 51.1 going back to January. May ease off into the 50.5, 50.6 territory when we see the number coming through. And the Caixin survey, as I mentioned, a more reliable one, is already below the expansion contraction line for the manufacturing PMI. It was at 49.1 and 49.5 if we're lucky when we get to February. So fairly soft indicators coming out of China this week. As far as Australia is concerned, we had a number of indicators last week. We had the wage price index. It's just on that boundary of being a potential problem for the RBA. Now, the RBA wants a problem with wages. They want them to accelerate to a degree, but they don't want them to accelerate too much. And what we got with the wage price index, and it was a Q4 reading going back to late last year, got a lift to 0.7% quarter on quarter from 0.6. That's just elevated the annual read to 2.3% from 2.2. But 0.7%, if you keep getting 0.7s and annualise that, you're running 2.8. And we won't keep at that because we're getting more wage pressure starting to build almost as we speak. And so we're more likely to get 0.8s and 0.9s when we get the Q1 and Q2. The Q1 wage price index, when that comes out, may be the potential catalyst for the Reserve Bank to start lifting interest rates. But it'd have to be around about a 0.8 or a 0.9 for that to occur. So we're on weather watch at the moment for when the RBA may start to lift rates. But still at earliest, it's still over 3 months away. In terms of the other data last week, we had some Q4 data, Q4 construction spending, private new capital expenditure spending. Construction spending was affected, obviously, by the shutdowns that ran through the course of Q4 in both New South Wales and in Victoria related to COVID. So we had another setback. It was down 0.4% after being down 1.2% quarter on quarter the quarter before. Private new capital expenditure, though, was slightly better than it was going back to Q3. In Q3, private new capital expenditure fell by 2.2%. It lifted by 1.1% for Q4. And it was largely there on building work. Building work actually lifted by 2.2%. Something else I should mention in our part of the world last week, across the Tasman, the RBNZ, they've now they now lifted their official cash rate three times in this cycle. They did it again last week by 25 basis points to 1.0. Compare that with our 0.1. In the commentaries they came out, they're indicating that they're going to be doing a lot more interest rate hikes over the course of the next couple of years, in fact, a couple of percentage points of them over the next. That's just what they're planning. Now, having said that, New Zealand's in a slightly different position to Australia. It's got way more tightness running through the labour market at the moment. It's got the beginnings of wages running much faster than Australia. And on top of that, house prices are rising over there at over 30%. Rather than the 20-odd percent that we're getting here in Australia. So it's very, very different position in terms of the inflation pressures which are coming through. But it is a sign that some central banks are starting to run pretty aggressively now in terms of starting to lift interest rates. this week in Australia, there's a lot coming out. We've got the Reserve Bank meeting on Tuesday. Don't expect to see any real change from that. You know, they've already announced that they're finishing quantitative easing, and don't expect them to really move this meeting towards effective quantitative tightening yet, which would mean that, you know, they start to, rather than actually purchasing government bonds, they would be in the position of becoming effectively a net seller of government bonds. Don't expect to see that occurring really for the next meeting or two. We're waiting to see what they might say about when they might be thinking about lifting interest rates. At the moment, it's wait and see. And with the uncertainties, with the geopolitical situation internationally, if anything, they'll probably double down a little bit on that wait and see for the time being. So we're still several meetings away from when they start to lift interest rates. But obviously our problem, you know, continues to get worse with the inflation build-up whilst they're sitting on the sidelines, and implies there's more to be done over time. In terms of other data coming through, there's some more contributions to Q4 GDP coming out. Q4 GDP will come out on Wednesday. At this stage, market consensus for Q4 GDP is quite a big rebound, and it's largely driven by household spending. We've already had real retail sales for Q4. They lifted by a record 8.4%, so that's the highest ever recorded in that survey. That'll be making a contribution to household consumption spending, which in turn is 60% of GDP spending. So the market consensus is that GDP actually rose 2.5% quarter on quarter, and that will lift the annual rate of GDP growth well into the mid-threes. It was at 3.9% going back the quarter before. The reason that the annual rate comes back is that we had such strong 3% plus quarter-on-quarter reads going back to Q3 and Q4, going back to 2020, the back end of 2020. That's, you know, the main reason why you get the annual growth rate just coming back, but it's still a very strong annual growth rate. In terms of any other data, we've got some January readings of retail sales. They're expected to lift. We've got January home loans coming out. Home loans have had two very strong months in a row. The market consensus is there's still another 3% lift in terms of the value of home loans in January. So we're still not really quite over the peak in terms of the strength in the housing market, and it's a slowly evolving peak, really. We're not expecting to see major collapse through that in the near term. And we'll also get some January readings of home building approvals. December home building approvals are very strong, up 8.2%. It's expected they lifted probably another three running through January. And international trade in goods and services, we're past our peak in terms of monthly lift in international trade, in terms of the trade surplus. It's still running huge. Even going back to December, we were running a trade surplus of $8.4 billion. We're still expecting a trade surplus of $7.5 billion. So very large trade surpluses, largely because exports are still running. Whilst even though imports are starting to rise with stronger domestic spending here, we're still getting these very strong reads running through the international trade side. As far as Europe's concerned, last week we had manufacturing PMIs come out, and in some ways this refers back to what I said about China. You know, China's been slowing. Europe is actually strengthening, notwithstanding the fact that they got a war on their doorstep now. So we had the preliminary February Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index came out. It held a very high level. It was at 58.7. It held at 58.4. The services sector PMI has actually lifted from 51.1 to 55.8. So these are very strong lead indicators for what may happen to European growth. We also had the February Business and Consumer Survey out of Europe. that strengthened to 114 from 112.7. 114 is actually quite an elevated reading and implies quite a deal of strength ahead. This week, we have the problem in children of Europe, and that's their inflation rate. We get the February CPI, and that's going to lift again. So it looks as if it's going to rise to 5.3% year on year from 5.1. Core CPI is going to lift, we think, from 2.4 to 2.7. These are miles above the ECB's target, but the ECB is still prevaricating in terms of when it may lift interest rates. It does have a meeting this week, but still not expecting them to touch that. Now, seemingly ridiculously low, you know, the deposit one, among their official interest rates, the deposit rate is still sitting at minus 0.5%. That is just crazy low, and at some point does have to move. And we get the January producer price index coming out. The year-on-year on producer prices going back to December was 26.2%. It's expected to lift again to 26.9%. So that's what's in the pipeline in terms of inflation pressure for Europe. The unemployment rate is at the lowest it's been since the establishment of the euro going back to 1999. It was at 7% going back to December, and is expected to stay down at that relatively low level by European standards. What I should mention with their unemployment rate is that it's higher in some of the peripheral countries. What's really anchoring the very low unemployment rate is Germany, where the unemployment rate is hovering around the high twos to low 3% mark. Very over full employment as far as the German economy is concerned, and you know, that also is helping to pressure these producer prices, and that's feeding into the CPI. We also get January retail sales. They're over the Omicron wave too, so expecting a rebound number of plus 1.5% after being down 3%. But broadly speaking, sure, there's a lot of noise around in the news feeds at the moment, not least around fairly horrific events which are occurring in Eastern Europe. But it's worthwhile keeping in mind that the underpinnings as far as economies are concerned at the moment are still pretty strong. We've still got inflation as a major problem. If anything, the war in Eastern Europe it makes inflation worse. It may temper growth a little, but there are some strong underpinnings. And as far as trying to call what may happen in Eastern Europe, of course, nobody can do that. It's very much in the hands of what Vladimir Putin decides to do next.